and welcome to Money Trail with me, Amir Arafat. Today, U.S. trade deficit with China further widens, with Chinese economy promising to take over that of the U.S. come 2015. The U.S. trade deficit widened in April as demand for foreign cars, cell phones, and other imported goods outpaced growth in U.S. exports. The politically sensitive deficit with China surged to $24.1 billion, the highest level since January, and the largest with any single nation. Imports jumped 21%, while exports fell 4.7%. The U.S. trade deficit with China today is some 28 times larger than it was during the Reagan era. That daunting deficit has grown by 18% per year since China first entered the World Trade Organization back in 2001. China's enormous trade advantage, now the largest nation-on-nation trade deficit in the history of the world, has put it in the enviable negotiating position of being able to say no to most American demands. According to Robert Fogel, the director of the Center for Population Economics at the University of Chicago Booth School of Business and the winner of the 1993 Nobel Memorial Prize in Economics, by 2040, the Chinese economy will reach $123 trillion, or nearly three times the economic output of the entire globe in 2000. China's per capita income will hit $85,000, more than double the forecast for the European Union, and also much higher than that of India and Japan. In other words, the average Chinese megacity dweller will be living twice as well as the average Frenchman when China goes from a poor country in 2000 to a super-rich country in 2040. Although it will not have overtaken the United States in per capita wealth, China's share of global GDP, 40%, will dwarf that of US, 14%, and the European Union, 5%, 30 years from now. By 2015, China's GDP will overtake that of the U.S.
China has just been a miracle. I mean, since 1987, the growth, capitalism, and free markets unleashed an economy that was just remarkable. China had the blessing of a labor force, of a national people that had a tremendous fortitude to move forward, to make themselves better, to build their country. And they're due quite a bit of respect for their accomplishments over the last 30 years, since 1978, when really the reforms had begun.
There's now little doubt that China's economy will replace U.S.'s economy. It's the world's largest economy. Just a few years. By 2015, China's GDP will top that of the U.S. By 2040, China's GDP will be $123 trillion. But what lies behind the fall of the United States? Of course, anything that goes up must come down. But what's behind this bankruptcy? Could it be moving away from real productive economy toward the financial engineering and innovation on Wall Street? During the last four decades, deindustrialization in the U.S. and industrialization and urbanization in China have allowed China to emerge as one of the world's biggest workshops, despite still lagging technically behind leading industrial countries. China's absorption into the American-led economic orbit has set the stage for the next phase of developments in the 21st century. But while in the past, the client economies of the U.S. were small, China today is a giant and growing satellite. The next phase of the U.S.-China economic relationship will profoundly shape the future of the world economy.
The U.S. has been in decline for a while now. Its trade deficits is becoming absurd, and no one is even talking about it. The U.S. thinks it can ignore this trade deficit because it has a world reserve currency. It doesn't worry about debts because it can print its own money, so to speak. But the Chinese have too many dollars. They don't know what to do with it. They are not lending as much back to us. They're using some of that money to buy gold. They are the world's biggest buyer of gold at the moment. So they're accumulating real wealth. They're using some of that money to buy American assets. The Chinese are also buying American real estates, American ports, is buying American hard assets. So here you have a contradiction, among many contradictions in this very problematic relationship.
For decades now, U.S. companies and corporations have been exporting and outsourcing millions and millions of jobs to China under the ethos of maximizing profit for the shareholders, seeking cheap labor. There was a time when China happened to be U.S.'s sweatshop, with thousands and thousands of Chinese girls and women sitting in silos sewing Nike t-shirts. But China says sweatshop no more. Today, everything you find in America, almost everything, is made in China. From iPhones to U.S. flags.
The price that we pay is, of course, as you mentioned, in U.S. jobs. The United States has lost basic manufacturing jobs to other countries. First of all, in order, places like Japan and Korea, and now they've become wealthy. So now we move to China and then Indonesia and Bangladesh, where a lot of clothing is being manufactured. And I think that we all know the story of the terrible tragedy of the collapse of the Bangladesh clothing factory that was manufacturing so many clothes for the United States. So all of these factors are a kind of a dynamic relationship with each other. That is, the cheaper goods that Americans want and that the world wants are manufactured in places with low labor costs. And as a result, the countries that consume these goods lose the labor that would normally be used to manufacture those goods inside the country itself.
What's in a name? Socialism with Chinese characteristics or state capitalism? Whatever the name, for the past three decades or so, China's economy has been booming with a staggering rate of around 10%. What is the secret behind this meteoric rise?
China's initial rise came from opening up markets, free markets. Use free market for price discovery, which was the most important. Okay, you got to remember, China was a planned economy where prices were planned. One of the most essential items in capitalism is that markets have to determine prices. So they made the right moves. China, if you think about it, is just a replay of the Industrial Revolution. We saw this happen in Germany after World War II. We saw it happen in Japan after World War II. You take the elements of the Industrial Revolution, which have their roots back two centuries ago, and all those elements are available today. The only difference around the world today now is who's got the cheapest labor force. China had the cheapest labor force. Very smartly, they used that. And what they did was they built their economy on an export economy. Now, look at Germany after World War II. They did the same thing. They built a tremendous export economy. Look at Japan. They did the same thing. They built a tremendous export economy. But there's another parallel there, something you've touched on. Germany and Japan, to some extent, probably not the extent of China yet, okay, they kept very tight control, state control, of their corporations and so forth. There's a lot of state statism in a sense, where the state is the partner with the private sector.
In 2010, China became the world's second largest economy, and some economists predicted the Chinese economy would become twice as big as that of the United States by 2030. China was the largest or second largest export market for more than 78 countries in 2012, compared to only 20 countries in 2000. China's trade surplus in 2012, nevertheless, still came mostly from its trade with the United States.
The United States is exporting a lot of natural resources and also agricultural goods, including milk, for instance, to China to support the Chinese industry. So it's a very curious situation. It's almost a reverse colonial situation where the Chinese are importing natural products from the United States and then manufacturing them there and then re-exporting those products to the United States. This is what happened during the British colonial era in areas like, for instance, Iran or primarily India. Natural resources going from India to Great Britain, where they were manufactured into finished goods and then re-exported to India and then sold on the retail market.
Newly released figures from both countries show that in 2012, American exports and imports in goods excluding services were worth $3.82 trillion, while China's total trade volume reached $3.87 trillion. For the first time, China thus exceeded the United States as the world's largest trading nation. The 2012 U.S. trade deficit with China was $315.1 billion, a record high.
The difference between the two countries is that the Chinese have a long-term economic plan. They are moving ahead. They are building a rail system, many rail lines to Europe. Already, you can ship freights directly by rail from Holland and from Belgium to China. And the Chinese are planning more rail lines to connect China with countries like Turkey, France, etc. So they have a long-term plan to move their products to Europe and to move products from Europe to China. They're consolidating these economic ties. The U.S. doesn't have any of these economic planning. The U.S. Solution to almost every problem, it seems, is a military. It bullies, it tries to harass its allies into cooperating with it, and it has been using its control of the world the world banking system to enrich itself, and it has been relying on the U.S. dollar, the U.S. petrodollar, to enrich itself. But it doesn't have a long-term economic vision, and China has. So that's an advantage to China right there.
China keeps investing in its future, creating jobs, building infrastructure, funding education and technology, and its GDP soars. And America keeps sliding into a no-growth economy to 1% GDP growth in a generation.
The Chinese are engaging in a tremendous development of their infrastructure. That is, they're building railroads, transportation systems. They obviously are building many, many new facilities for manufacture, but also for utilities. So their infrastructural investment is really huge. And by contrast, the United States is devoting almost nothing by comparison to infrastructural development. This has been a longstanding complaint. We have in the United States about 7.5% unemployment, and our bridges and roads are deteriorating. We really have no high-speed railways, like they do in China and also other parts of Europe. And many critics of the situation in Washington, both under President Bush and under President Obama, has been that we haven't had enough infrastructural development.
From a Nixon and China moment some four decades ago to Xi in the U.S. a couple weeks back, a quick look at Sino-American economic ties. Since the United States and China reopened their doors to each other back in 1971, their economic and financial ties have been widely viewed as a ballast of an uneasy relationship. Their trading volume in 2012 reached an all-time high of $536.2 billion on U.S. books and $484.7 billion on Chinese calculation. In 1972, it stood at a mere $4.7 million. 40 years ago, China's gross national product was only about 7% of that of the United States. In 2012, China exceeded the U.S. as the largest trading nation in the world, and the United States became China's largest export market. The decade 1971 to 80 witnessed rapid institution building and a lifting of some of the barriers to the flow of goods, technology, and people between China and the United States. These changes transformed U.S.-China trade relations and China's place in the world economy. China was marginal to world trade back in 1971 when Richard Nixon visited China.
Well, ever since the opening to China under President Nixon, we've seen increasing trade relations between the United States and China. And it's a little bit deceptive because in the Chinese-American situation, you don't take into account that many, many, many of the exported goods from China are actually in factories that are either owned or controlled by Americans. Americans went to China and were able to get tremendous government concessions for the building of factories in China because the Chinese government knew that in order to make progress, they needed to keep their citizens employed.
In June 1971, Nixon officially ended the U.S. trade embargo on China, sweeping aside the legal barriers which had hindered significant economic interaction between the two nations since 1950. With full diplomatic relations established in 1979, the two governments moved to eliminate the remaining legislative and administrative hurdles to commercial relations. Of critical importance, on January 24, 1980, U.S. Congress passed a trade agreement conferring contingent most favored nation, that is MFN status, on China. Throughout the 1980s, the normalization of political relations between the two countries and China's economic reforms paved the way for acceleration in the American-Chinese transfer of goods, values, ideas, personnel, and technology. These interactions were mutually beneficial, although from the U.S. point of view, China trade was still small. As early as 1984, the U.S. had become China's third largest trading partner, trading only Japan and Hong Kong, then still a British colony.
U.S. corporation helped China to become what it is today. Okay, it moved its industrial base to China. The U.S. moved its industrial base to China and basically coached and taught the Chinese how to become productive. Okay, not that the Chinese don't have their own virtues and their own assets, but the U.S. basically helped China to become equal to itself and eventually to surpass itself. So that's the secret. Okay, but in doing so, the U.S. Destroyed itself. Okay, so that's the paradoxical situation. The U.S. elite, by enriching themselves by going to China, has destroyed the American working class. So this situation is unsustainable. The USA cannot move forward because it produces next to nothing right now. Okay, you cannot have a perennial trade deficit. And you cannot expect to buy things when you don't produce anything.
China's entry into the World Trade Organization on December 11, 2001, established a new order in the export-driven economy and in American-Chinese relations. It took 15 years of negotiations from 1986 to 2001 for China to become the 143rd member of the WTO. American exports to China increased by 81% in the 3 years after China joined the WTO. Similarly, American imports from China rose by 92% in the 3 years following China's WTO entry. Yet frictions in U.S.-Chinese relations remain in spite of their enhanced economic cooperation and flourishing bilateral trade. Trade imbalances, intellectual property rights, industrial policy, and investment environments are major American concerns. China, on the other hand, has demanded fairer business and investment opportunities in American and world markets.
The real challenge for China now as they transition, because they're going to have to transition to become one of the world leaders, is to start making a consumer-based economy. That's the next stage of evolution for China. The low-hanging fruit have already been picked out there, and they've made tremendous gains. Now it's a matter of turning it around and making a consumer-based economy. Approximately 20% of their population is middle income, and that's about between 40,000 and 100,000 RMB or UN income per year, and that translates in the U.S. to about $8,000 to about $14,000. Okay, they have to expand that part. They have to make their consumer base larger. Then they become a world power. China's growth has averaged close to 10% until recently, and they're now down to about, I guess, 8% last year, or 7.9%, their GDP growth, which is still tremendous in the face of the U.S. or the rest of the globe, which has been basically stalled.
For years now, China has been the top holder of U.S. Treasury debt. But there are signs now that China is diversifying away from U.S. Treasury debts in dollars. What is China buying? It is now buying real estate. It's buying companies. It's asking for natural resources and shares of major profit-making companies within the U.S. A tectonic shift for China. China is the largest foreign holder of U.S. treasuries, thus allowing the United States to maintain its huge budgetary deficit. As of January 2013, China owned over $1.2 trillion in American debt out of total debt of over $17 trillion, more than 100% of the U.S. GDP in 2012.
There's a synchronous relationship between China and the United States with regard to finances. And one of the things that is, I think, most destructive and what we don't talk about much in the United States, and actually most American citizens are not aware of, is the fact that we have this interdependency between China and the United States. It's true, the Chinese have very wisely and very shrewdly bought up American debt in enormous amounts. And on the other hand, China is dependent on the United States to buy its manufactured goods. So neither party can really exert complete leverage over the other. The United States would like China to raise the value of its currency, and the Chinese at the same time threaten the United States with, for instance, recalling the debt that they've purchased from the U.S.
Many economists consider both China and the U.S. as the two major poles of the current global economic crisis, with China producing all the goods and saving all it can, and the U.S., on the other hand, printing all the dollars and consuming all it can. In reaction to the post-2008 economic downturn and the sovereign debt and euro crises, advocates of a new world economic order have called for a rebalancing of global demand. To some, this means that the United States must move swiftly to significantly reduce its massive trade deficit and save more and spend less, whereas emerging markets and economies with large surpluses, such as China, should spend more, boost the value of their currencies, and reduce exports.
The U.S. forces oil-producing countries to sell oil for dollars. Okay, so every other country has to accumulate dollars to buy oil, but the Chinese are already making plans to move away from this. Already, they're establishing agreements with different countries to trade in their own currencies. Okay, they are bypassing using the U.S. dollar. The Chinese are trading with Japan, Australia, France, Brazil, India. All these countries, including traditional American allies, just such as France, Australia, and Japan, in their own currency. So they're already bypassing the U.S. dollars. And the Chinese have been accumulating gold, record amount of gold. So there's speculation that at some point they will have a gold-backed yuan. If they have a gold-backed currency, then they can use that to supplant the U.S. dollar. So if that happens, then the game is over.
The United States and China have made strategic moves to hedge against future uncertainty and conflict. Since entering the WTO back in 2001, China's export and import trade with other partners has increased more rapidly than its trade with the U.S. In 2012, China's fastest trade growth was with Hong Kong, an 83% increase from 2011, Taiwan 70%, South Africa 98.9%, and the Association of Southeast Asian Nations, ASEAN, 42.9%. This underscores the diversification of China's partnerships, notably with Asian and Pacific nations. It has simultaneously reduced its dependence on the U.S. and established a position of power in key areas, notably East and Southeast Asia, but also Europe, Africa, and Latin America, For its part, the United States in November of 2011 announced a new emphasis on East Asia and projects that projects a strengthening of its military and economic ties in the Asia Pacific.
Well, thank you for watching. Always follow the money trail with me, Amir Arfa.